Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world, and welcome to The Crossed in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say once again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my radio program. Today is Thursday, July 28th, 2022. Very rapidly, our summer is coming to an end, and oh, I don't like that. I love the summer heat. I love the summertime, the picnics, the barbecues, the outdoors. But anyway, I want to speak to you this morning about a dear Iranian friend. Her name is Nazreen Mohammadi. She is an American citizen. She's lived here for quite a few years, and she came, of course, from the troubled nation of Iran where there is no peace and freedom. But while she was there, she was close to one of her brothers, and one of her brothers was named Akbar Mohammadi. Akbar was a person of great faith, a lover of peace, and a lover of freedom. The problem is he was born in Iran, which is opposed to peace, which is opposed to freedom, which is opposed to anything unless you're dedicated to the Islamic Republic. Akbar was a man who stood up for his principles and what he believed in. And this morning on the cross in the desert, I want to pay special tribute to Akbar. It was over 16 years ago, this July 30th, that he died in Evin prison as a martyr for the Iranian people, a man of peace and freedom. And it's 16 very painful years for Nazreen. At this time of year, whenever the summer is coming to an end, she can't help but to remember her brother, and I will never forget him. Even though I never met him, I know Nazreen, and he was a wonderful, wonderful person, because so is she. I want to talk to you about Akbar Mohammadi. Maybe you've never heard of him, but I want to introduce you a little bit to him and what he stood for. On July 30th, 2006, 34-year-old pro-democracy activist Akbar Mohammadi died in Evin prison after enduring 7 long years of grueling torture at the hands of the brutal Iranian regime. He had been arrested back in 1999 after taking part in the student uprising demonstrations, the largest pro-democracy movement since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Akbar spent most of his incarceration enduring long hours of interrogations, beatings, and torture. A week before his death, he had been on a hunger strike protesting the refusal by authorities to allow him to seek medical treatment for his injuries. Now, one of the things I want to just stop and explain to you, a lot of prisoners who are on death row that are due to be hanged, many of them get very ill. And one of the tactics of this brutal government is to not allow them to seek any kind of medical treatment. And a lot of times, these activists, these political prisoners, will die before their death penalty sentence. And this is what they were doing to Akbar. He was going through some very difficult physical trials. He was asking for medical attention. They refused him medical attention, and so he decided to go on a hunger strike to get the attention of human rights activists out there. Now, remember, in 1999, he was arrested, and this is 2006. Facebook is just arrived on the scene. Social media is just now in its infancy. It's beginning to move forward. But in Akbar's situation, he didn't have the full benefit of the big social media push that we have today. So think about that as you listen to his story. I believe that had this happened later, it would have been more successful. He would have gotten more people to stand up for him, to be on his side. But social media was really in its infancy. And, of course, as you know, Facebook is banned in Iran. And at that time, 2006, they didn't have the VPN abilities to override it. So he is now protesting not getting medical treatment. But Akbar is just one example of the many thousands of political prisoners who are silenced by a brutal regime for speaking out against the gross human rights violations that occur daily in Iran. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion is a precious gift that you and I enjoy, but in Iran, the gift of freedom, the gift of democracy, is only a hope and dream in a society which is ruled by Islamic law. Well, this coming weekend will be a very painful one for my dear friend Nazrin Mohammadi. Of course, Nazrin is Akbar's sister. She loved her brother and was very close to him. But since his death, Nazrin has worked very, very hard to keep her brother's vision of peace and freedom alive. One way that she has done this and accomplished keeping his story alive is by publishing his prison diary. And in this book that she wrote called Ideas and Lashes, The Prison Diary of Akbar Mohammadi, it describes in detail the beatings and the torture that Akbar endured on a daily basis. Akbar vividly describes the long, grueling hours of interrogations, repeated questions, demand for answers, and even when he told the truth, the interrogators responded by beating the bottom of his bare feet with steel cables until he passed out. All Akbar was guilty was protesting against the government in the uprisings of 1999. That's all he was guilty of wanting freedom. So he endured daily floggings, no medical treatment, and very little sleep between the endless interrogations. That was his daily life. At one point, Akbar was handcuffed and hung upside down. That's a painful and agonizing form of torture designed to force him to reveal the names of other students that were involved in the demonstrations. Yet, in all of this, Akbar refused to tell. He remained loyal to his friends until the very, very end. Nazrin writes in her book, Ideas and Lashes, that her brother gave his life for democracy and freedom for his fellow citizens. And she also points out in this book that Akbar stood up against the injustices of his fellow cellmates. And for that reason alone, he was subjected to more beatings, more torture. Whatever our family sent him cash in jail, Nazrin writes, this is what Akbar did. He would immediately share that money with his cellmates, keeping the least amount for himself. Instead of the painful that Nazrin and her family endured following the sad death of her brother, there is a glimmer of justice in all of this tragedy. Nazrin and her brother, Manachar, were invited to the White House by President George Bush at that time and honored for their courageous fight for freedom in Iran. The fight for freedom and human rights in Iran is an ongoing struggle that continues to claim the lives of many, many brave protesters. In the midst of his captivity, Akbar wrote a poem of hope, a light in the darkness that looked forward to the day that the struggle would finally come to an end. And here's what he wrote. The light of injustice will not burn forever. If it burns one night, its fire will be extinguished tomorrow. How long will sorrow be the joy of my existence? Much sin has been committed in your name, O freedom. On the threshold of execution gallows, torture rack and prison, they drink wine and raise their glasses in your name, O freedom. The dark nights are over, my friend, and we will see the dawn when the sun rises on the edge of freedom. Akbar had that kind of hope and conviction in the midst of his trials and sufferings. Akbar, we honor your memory today and what you stood for. And Nazreen, we stand with you and your brother and family that one day the light of injustice will be extinguished in Iran and the dawn will rise on the edge of freedom. God bless you, Akbar Mohammadi. You know, I have the honor and privilege of regularly meeting on Skype with my Iranian friends to help teach them English. And during a video chat, I remember I would read my books and they would read with me and help them pronounce words. This is how I teach them English. We have a great time together. My friends will, of course, during that Skype chat, share with me the latest happening in their lives, including their fears and frustrations of living under the iron fist of the Islamic regime. I have a story to tell you with a point. I have a dear friend who lives in Mashhad, and I won't mention her name for security reasons. It's just that important to me. She told me a very sad story of her early childhood in Iran. You know, women are required to wear a hijab whenever they go out publicly. And, of course, the morality police patrol the streets of Iran looking for violators of the Islamic dress code. If a woman is not wearing her hijab correctly, or she is showing too much skin, or has on too much makeup, they can be fined and arrested. They're always pulled aside. They're always lectured. My Iranian friend recalled the time, though, in school when she was a child. When the teacher would warn the class, she would say, if a woman does not cover her head, that in the judgment, Allah would dangle her by her hair over the fires of hell. Well, the themes of fear and judgment and vengeance are the constant themes I hear from my friends in Iran. They painfully describe to me how they were taught about who God is. I seldom ever hear them describe being God as loving and merciful. Iranians are subjected to a distorted picture about who God is. When looking through the Quran, the theme of God's unconditional love for mankind, well, it's never found in the Quran. Instead, the Quran teaches that, quote, Allah loves not the transgressor. Surah chapter 2, verse 190, that Allah loveth not those who do wrong. Surah chapter 3, verse 57, end of quote. Well, the reader is further informed that Allah loveth only those who do good deeds, and quote, and spend of your substance in the cause of Allah, and make not your own hands contribute to destruction, but do good. For Allah loveth only those who do good. Surah chapter 2, verse 195. Well, the conclusion is that Allah does not love the sinner, the wayward sinner, but he only loves those who consistently do good. His love is conditional. It's based on a person who keeps himself, he or her, pure and clean and only does what is right. Well, let me give you the contrast. In contrast, the Bible paints a completely different picture of who God is. The distorted picture of his character dissolves in the theme of his unconditional. From Genesis to Revelation, the reader is painted a picture of God, a God who pursues, a God of irresistible love who pursues his sinful covenant people. And he does it because he is a God of love and mercy. Instead of punishing and forsaking those who have broken his holy law, God instead reaches out to them with his arms of love and mercy. He's not condoning our sinful behavior, but instead of punishment and retribution, he gives us mercy. Let me show you how I know that. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 3 declares and speaks of Israel, "I have loved you with an everlasting love." That's the cry of God's heart to his covenant people. His love is undeserved. It's freely given to a people who should receive judgment. You and me, we should receive his wrath. But instead, we receive his mercy. And when we come to the New Testament, the picture of God's love is made abundantly clear through Jesus. Jesus treated sinners with compassion and mercy. He once told the story of a man who owned 100 sheep, and when he discovered one of them missing, he searched the wilderness over and over again until he found that one lost sheep. Once the lost sheep was found, Jesus said that the man joyfully carried the sheep back home on his shoulders. Then the man encouraged his neighbors to rejoice with him because he had found that one lost sheep. Jesus goes on to explain in this parable, in the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than the 99 others who have not strayed away. More joy. That's a picture, a portrait that Jesus painted of God's love, and it's vastly different than the one painted by in the Quran. God pursues the lost sheep with his irresistible love, and then heaven throws a party when the sheep is finally found. In direct contrast to the Quran's teaching that Allah does not love the transgressor, that is the wayward sinner, that is the lost sheep, the Bible instead emphasizes God's unconditional and undeserved love. Romans chapter 5, verse 8. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still in our sin, while we were still sinners. What's the message? God loves the sinner. This is the constant theme of the Bible. Instead of the distorted picture of a God of hatred and vengeance, the Bible paints a beautiful portrait of a God who never gives up on his people, who never forsakes them, but is constantly crying out for them to return to his mercy. You know what? After I explained all of that to my Iranian friend on Skype, these wonderful biblical truths about who God is, you know what she said? She said, "I have always had a picture of a God that is kind and loving." Isn't that amazing where she lives? Somehow in God's providence, the gospel was getting to her, the good news. She had been on the internet, and she had seen what I was saying. Well, oh, how he loves us. Knowing the unconditional love of God, well, that's transformed my life. Whenever I fail God, and I do, and do the things that dishonor him, I cry out for his mercy. And remember the beautiful lyrics to this powerful song by David Crowder, "Oh, How He Loves Us." I want you to hear it right now on the cross in the desert.
He is jealous for me. Love's like a hurricane. I am a tree bending beneath the weight of his wind and mercy. When all of a sudden I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize just how beautiful you are and how great your affections are for me. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, oh.
Music of David Crowder, Oh How He Loves Us. That describes, I think, perfectly what I've been trying to communicate to you this morning in my blog, in my book, The Cross in the Desert, the differences between the Quran and the Bible on the subject of God, who He is and how He loves us. I'll never forget, it was about, I guess, 2-3 weeks ago, in my part-time job at Chick-fil-A, a Muslim couple came in and sat down in the booth and were given their food. And part of my job is to go up to them and to greet them and to ask them if I can refill their drinks, bring them additional sauces for their chicken, their salad. And I remember as I saw them, this Muslim couple, the lady had the hijab on, they had a young little boy. In other circumstances, at a different location, I would have had the opportunity to talk with them, to speak with them, to share with them. But on my job, I cannot do that in that way. I think you understand there are rules. But I was praying. I was just saying, Lord, I want them to know you, to know your love, to know this great gift of grace and forgiveness that you want to give to them, that they're trying to earn through fasting and prayer and good works and obedience. They need a Savior, not a prophet. I believe God honors that situation and answered my prayer, and I'm thinking of this couple right now this morning as I'm speaking to you, and I'm remembering them. I don't know their name, but God knows that. That's not important. God knows my heart. If you have an opportunity, you're not in a work environment, and on the street you see Muslims, understand something. They need the good news of the gospel that you and I believe. And you may be the only Bible they will ever read. And instead of carrying anger for what they did on 9/11, which is coming up soon, reach out with grace and mercy, because that's what God did to you. You were once dead in sin. You were once in rebellion to a holy God. And in his mercy, he reached out to you through someone and presented the gospel. We need to do the same. To those that are trapped in Iran, my friend Modest even understood the God of love. And so this morning, I'm encouraging you. For those of us that have experienced the life-transforming power of God's love, let your life be an overflowing fountain of living water to the dry and dirty and dusty people from Islam that are searching, that are yearning for a righteousness that is a free gift, cannot earn it. The Bible is very clear, for by grace we are saved through faith, that not of ourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works lest we boast. The next time you see that Muslim man or woman, in your love and in your mercy, reach out to them and tell them the story of Jesus and of God's unconditional love. This is what we are called to do, church, to bring healing to the broken. Let's do that today. Let's reach out to everyone with the good news of the gospel and invite them to the table to partake of the goodness of God with them. God bless you. Have a great week, and I will see you again on Monday on the Cross in the Desert.